This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
Tuesdays, we always are pleased to visit with our Hall of Famer, Joe Morgan of ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. And Joe, Ryan and I were talking earlier about the Ryan Howard contract. Neither one of us have any real big issue with it money-wise. Philadelphia's got the money to pay him, but there are many different levels to this story. What was your reaction to the news when you heard how much money he was getting?
Well, it didn't surprise me because when rumors were circulating that they were thinking about trading Ryan Howard for Albert Pujols, I think the Phillies had to reach out to Ryan and say, hey, man, you're our guy. We're going to keep you, as the Cardinals did with Albert Pujols. They said, you're our guy. They haven't signed him to a new contract yet. But I think both teams were put under the gun that they had to do something. If you're asking me about the amount, I say it's okay with me because it's not my money. And I'm not one of these guys that have a problem with the guys making a lot of money. First of all, if you're going to pay Joe Mauer, you know, $184 million, you pay Holiday $121 million, then you have to pay Ryan Howard $125 million. So I don't see a problem with that.
Joe, how does it affect a clubhouse when a guy gets paid like this, though? How does it affect the other people that he's playing with?
Well, the effect is only a problem if they don't think the guy deserves it or he hasn't been the star. But, I mean, if you look at Ryan Howard's numbers, and that's what this is all about. Unfortunately, the game has turned into just numbers. It's a numbers game now. It's not about, winning and losing so much. It's about numbers. And if you look at the numbers, I mean, he puts up the numbers, 40-plus home runs. You know, he drives in 130 to 45, 145 runs a year. So he does produce runs, and that's how you win games. So it may be surprising to some people because he strikes out as much as he did in the past, but now he's cut down on his strikeouts. And if you look at the guy, I mean, they said to him, we want you to lose weight. He lost weight. We want you to be a better first baseman. He worked at it and became a better first baseman. So there's more to it than just the numbers here with him. There's an attitude. I think they feel like that he's a good guy and that he's the guy they want to build their organization around.
Joe Morgan hanging out with us on the Scott Van Pelt Show on ESPN Radio. The Orioles are off to a terrible start, and people are calling for the manager, Dave Tremblay, to be removed. Do you know when it's time for the team to make a decision at that spot?
Well, I think the players do, and I think the manager really knows deep down inside when it's time. I'm not sure the front office knows. If you're in the clubhouse, there's a feeling that goes around the clubhouse of, man, we're a disaster. Or he's a disaster, meaning the manager. There's a feeling that's in the clubhouse. You know when a guy needs to go. But, again, the front office is not always privy to that because somebody might talk to the front office. They may ask some questions. They ask you a question about Scott. He'll give you an answer. They ask me a question about Scott. I may give him a different answer. So I don't think the front office may know it at the same time that the players know.
Joe, Ryan and I were laughing before we visited with you here. When we were little, we'd be playing against a team. There was always that one team you played against that just destroyed you. It was the green team or the yellow team. Right now, when Pittsburgh looks out of their dugout and sees the Brewers, they see the team that used to terrorize us when we were little kids. I imagine you played on the team that was the one doing the terrorizing, but can you describe what it's like for Pittsburgh right now? They've lost 53-4 their last four games to Milwaukee. What happens to you mentally when that goes on?
Well, I'm going to describe what it's like when you're the tough guy.
Okay.
When you walk out on the field, as you know, when I did as a member of the Big Red Machine, when we walked on the field, you could look in the other team's eyes and you could see that they had a little admiration for you and they were a little intimidated. And I think that's what happens from, you know, that perspective. Look, if you're the Pirates and like you say, you see a Brewers uniform, you really want to run. I think it's gotten that bad. I was surprised because remember the Pirates started playing pretty well, you know, for a while.
7-5.
Yeah, and then they run into Milwaukee.
Yeah. You know? And now here they are.
And it's the same way with a pitcher though. Remember now there are certain pitchers who dominate certain teams, and then there are certain really good pitchers who can't beat certain teams. And as a hitter, you see the ball really well off a pitcher. It doesn't matter if he's the best pitcher in the league or the worst pitcher in the league. You see the ball well off of him, you're going to hit it. So what's that old saying? It's just a matchup.
Right. Joe, final thought here, and the word of the day in our business is transparent, and you work for us, and we enjoy having you. We enjoy visiting with you here, and you also have a role with Cincinnati. And I know that people are curious, well, if you work for ESPN, you work for Cincinnati, how does that work? So I just want to give you an opportunity just for our listeners that are curious, what exactly is it that you're doing with Cincinnati?
I'm glad you asked that question. Because first of all, as I said at the press conference, it was printed a different way. As I said at a press conference, I'm not here to make baseball decisions. I'm going to be helping in the community. I felt like if I'm on the air criticizing teams that do not have African American players, there are three right now: St. Louis, you know, San Francisco, and Kansas City. I said if I'm not willing to try to help change this, then I'm not any better. I can't criticize people.
Mm-hmm.
The Reds have a community fund. They work in the community. They're trying to help, you know, get more African American participation, you know, in baseball, so that in the end that'll help them. They came to me. I actually talked to them first about helping in that area. Now, what I am going to do, I'm going to help them in spring training. I'm going to do some things like that. And I would be lying if I said to you, if somebody asked me a question about one of the players, I don't answer it. Now, but I won't talk to them about other teams' players, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I've done that with other teams as well. You know, I've had two or three owners who are friends of mine that ask me about players on their team, and I give them an answer. But I won't talk to them about other teams' players. I know that sounds a little complicated to some people, but my job there is to help. I'm there to make this a better community and to help the diversity programs that the Cincinnati Reds have.
There you go. That's simple enough, and just wanted to get that out there so people understood. Sunday Night Baseball, you'll get to see the guy we started our conversation with, Ryan Howard and the Phillies welcoming the Mets Sunday night, 8:05 Eastern. Joe, pleasure talking with you. We'll visit with you next week.
Always a pleasure, Scott and Ryan.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Sports Illustrated, SI.com's Tom Verducci via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. All right, Tom, Ryan Howard signs a contract, $25 million a year. I was surprised. One, he's a first baseman, not a crucial defensive position. Secondly, I'm not sure who the Phillies were negotiating against. Tom, how surprised were you?
Surprised at the timing, Colin. I mean, this guy wasn't eligible for free agency until after 2011. There was no pressure to get anything done right now. You know, listen, they've talked about wanting to keep this core, this team together. They've done that. That's really the only motivation to get it done right now. So I think the timing was surprising.
Pat Gillick, who is my all-time favorite underrated GM. Everybody loves Theo Epstein and the Brian Cashmans. Everywhere Gillick goes, they win. He's now gone and consulting with the Phillies. Do you believe he had a hand in this? It doesn't feel Gillicky to me. I mean, he likes to keep his players, but did Pat Gillick have a say in this?
I'm sure he did. You know, Ruben Amaro leans on him a lot. You know, Pat's not there on a daily basis, but he still has an imprint on that organization. I think Ruben wouldn't be doing his job if he didn't draw on a resource like that. Because I agree with you. I think you're talking about a guy who may go to the Hall of Fame as a GM, and there's very few of those.
Tom Verducci joining us, The Herd on ESPN Radio. You wrote an article last year, which I have probably talked about a dozen times on this show. And you went to the All-Star break, and you went historically looking back, and if you're not good by the All-Star break, if you're sub-500, statistically you have almost no shot to be legitimate. When you look at the Red Sox issues, it's too early, obviously, Tom, but when we creep into 40 and 50 games, there does seem to be, you can draw some conclusions. Are the Red Sox in trouble here?
Yeah, I don't think it's too early to say they're in trouble because of that division, Colin. I mean, listen, you got the Rays and the Yankees fast out of the blocks. Listen, you got to figure when the season starts. One of those teams, if not both, is going to win 95 games. So there's no backdooring into the playoffs if you're an AL East team. So there's pressure on you, there's urgency on you from day one, unlike any other division in baseball. So that's hanging over your head. And I think it's a worst-case scenario for the Red Sox because the one thing they really counted on was premier starting pitching.
Right.
And they're not getting that. Beckett and Lester are getting knocked around. It's the front of their rotation, not the back of it. That would be troubling to me if I were a Red Sox fan.
generally in pro sports, Tom, you need a majority of your go-to guys in the prime of their career. In the Red Sox case, Beltre, Cameron, J.D. Drew, Ortiz, many flew past that exit on the interstate years ago. Are they simply not constructed with enough of their best players in their prime?
Well, that's an interesting point because you look at the Yankees and they have players on a similar aging arc, but they're not declining. You know, A-Rod, Jeter, and you know, last year it was Damon, and you know, Posada, Pettit, Rivera looks like he's going to go on forever like this. So the guys in Boston have aged, the guys in New York have not. It's a big difference between these two teams. When you look at Big Poppy, you look at Veritek, you look at Lowell, you Cameron, 37-year-old in center field. Yeah, age has become more of an issue for the Red Sox because of performance, not just because of age.
Well, it's interesting. They're pinch hitting now for David Ortiz. That doesn't sit well with his fans. But, you know, I look at Ortiz, and there's nobody in that lineup generally, you know, since Manny left. He didn't get the protection maybe he wants or needs. Are we looking at David Ortiz as a guy who is just, if not shot, it's over? I mean, the big days are over.
Well, if you're talking about MVP big days, yes. But in terms of still being an effective major league hitter, he can still be that hitter. The question I have for Terry Francona is, how much rope are you going to give him? Remember, they stood by him last year, and he took a 188 average into June with one home run last year.
Yeah.
I don't think, given where the Red Sox are at, they can afford to be that patient with him. It's a big key for them because, Colin, that team going into the season, they knew they were susceptible to right-handed pitching. And if they're not getting any power from Ortiz and J.D. Drew to keep right-handers honest, that's even a bigger problem than they expected.
Tom Verducci, one of the premier baseball writers in this country, SI.com. I watched the Rays-Red Sox series, Tom, and it was such a mismatch athletically. They put enormous pressure on Boston's defense. So to me, it's not a mirage. How long do you wait? What can the Sox do? Do they have to do things before the trading deadline? I mean, you're sitting there, you're Theo Epstein. That was not a mirage against Tampa. You know the Yankees are loaded. I kind of sense, not that there's desperation, but 15 games from now, could we be looking at 35 games into the season, Boston gripping?
It's probably a little too early, but I agree with you on the mismatch. I mean, you know, we don't use that a lot in baseball. You hear a lot in football and basketball, the way teams match up. That's actually the reason I picked Tampa instead of Boston to go to the playoffs, because head-to-head, I think it is athletically a mismatch. I mean, the Rays turned into a track meet. They have a lot of right-handed pitching, as I mentioned, which is bad for Boston. You're playing 19 times. I see Tampa winning that season series pretty easily, and that could be the difference right there in terms of Boston going to the playoffs or not. I just don't think they have a lot of options right now in terms of making this team better on the fly. They just got to hope what they have gets better.
Kurt Schilling came on our show yesterday and said he just doesn't see Javier Vasquez being a dominant American League pitcher. He said, listen, his good numbers are Atlanta and Montreal. The American League is significantly better. Your thoughts on those comments?
I think there's some truth to that. I don't think it's a makeup issue, though. I think he gives American League lineup too much credit. I mean, it is the varsity. The National League is the JV as far as offenses goes. I don't think there's any question about that. I think he pitches much too defensively in the American League, and for some reason, his velocity has been down this year. So he's bringing less stuff to the mound and getting hit. But I don't think it's a matter of makeup with him.
Tom, great talking to you. We'll have you on again. We love your insights.
Hey, love being here. Thanks.
Bring Dick Vitale into the conversation in just a second for his regular Tuesday chat with the Hall of Famer. But in case you didn't see it, you mentioned it yesterday, Mike, because you had seen it by that point. I had not. I saw it yesterday on SportsCenter after our show. For Friday night's game between the Nuggets and the Utah Jazz, George Karl, who was undergoing what can only be described as excruciating treatment.
Yeah.
For his in his battle with cancer, invited Rick Riley into his house to watch the game with him. And they just sat, they just had cameras there, and the two of them just talked. And you and I have had the chance to get to know George Karl a little bit over the years, particularly when we first started doing the show. He was coaching in Milwaukee, and we used to go there from time to time. We've sat with George Karl a lot. We both like George
Karl
a lot.
Yeah.
It was jarring, first of all,
it was
to see him. Not so much that he didn't. He looks okay.
Yeah, no, he does.
He looks
does.
A little drawn, but he looks okay. But he seems so deflated.
Yeah, he does.
And you understand why. And you could just see, I mean, it was incredible television. Watching him, watching this game on television, it was eating him alive.
Absolutely.
It's a horrible choice of words under the circumstances. But it almost feels that way. It was, you just know he couldn't stand watching this and being powerless to do anything about it. It was, it made me very sad watching it, but it was incredible TV to watch. If you haven't had a chance to see it, maybe, is it up on ESPN.com? It's something you should, if you get a chance to see it, it's an incredible look at what a coach is going through being apart from his team.
Yeah, Rick Riley asked him when they were watching the game, he said, can you learn anything from watching this on TV? He said, no.
Nothing.
I mean, he almost said it in a disgust way, like, you know, no, I am learning nothing by watching this.
And he got up in the second quarter and walked away and couldn't watch anymore.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And, oh, by the way, they're now down 3-1, and Carmelo Anthony is saying after games, I can't do this myself, and J.R. Smith is tweeting, we're a selfish team.
Yeah, so it's not good there.
In case you were wondering if they missed the coach, they certainly do. With that thought in mind, let's bring in Dickie V, his regular visit on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Looking at the way that team, which was so good so much of this year, Dickie V, is kind of falling apart at this point. If people don't think coaching matters on the NBA level, maybe this is proof that they're just dead wrong.
Well, there's no doubt about it. When you talk about certainly George Karl, you talk about one of the real tough, tenacious competitors you can ever meet. I remember George vividly as a player. I watched him play on a high school level, saw him diving into the stands in an All-American game, high school game, and he just showed why he loved the uniform so much and went to North Carolina. If you talk about somebody who got maximum of their ability, now let me tell you another part of George Karl. I was trying to raise $1 million one year for cancer research from my Dick Vitale Gala for the V Foundation. One of the first guys I called up, I said, George, I want to get 20 coaches together, 50 G's a coach, that's $1 million, 20 guys, commitment, $10,000 a year for 5 years, joined the President's Club of the V Foundation. Without any hesitation, said Dick, don't go any further. Count me in. Check came. George Karl is a winner. He's a winner in life. And I'll tell you, you mentioned watching that film and the scenario with Rick Riley, certainly very special and just breaks your heart. I just seen a movie recently, Peyton's Song, about the little girl who died here, and they showed her going through her radiation. They showed her what her body looked like after all the treatments versus when she was such this healthy little blonde girl. And I'll be honest with you guys, they asked me to say a few words after the film here at the Sarasota Film Festival, and I broke up. I just cried like a baby because no child, no human being should have to go through what these people go through. That disease is so vicious, and that's why I constantly thank people for helping me raise dollars. George is a special guy. If there's anybody that'll beat that disease, it'll be George Karl.
And if there is good news in it, it is that they say that while the treatment he's going through is very difficult,
it's curable,
his chances for survival are extremely high, like 85 to 90%. A tough segue into the NBA playoffs, Dickie V, but let's look at what's going on, including a San Antonio team on the verge of knocking out Dallas, a Mavericks team that was a lot of people's sexy pick to go to the finals. And San Antonio now doing it with Tim Duncan clearly closer to the end of his career than the beginning. Maybe they're getting a lot more coaching than people give them credit for.
Well, you know, hey, let's talk about this guy, Greg Popovich, okay? I'm really, if I walk down the street, I said to my wife the other day, this is true, now, she's around basketball, right? I mean, just to live with me, she's around hoops all the time. I said, Popovich, who is he? So I have no idea. It's our neighbor. It's a neighbor. I said, he's one of the greatest coaches of all. She said, what are you talking about? I said, the San Antonio Spurs, 4 world titles. I mean, if you took a survey, people don't know that name. This is a first ballot Hall of Famer. And what he's done with this club has been amazing. Everybody was talking about the Mavericks. They made the great trade. They get Butler. They get Hayward. They get all those guys. They come over. They're playing great basketball at the end of the year. They're down 3-1. Why? Well, take a look at the job Popovich has done to get the most now. He motivated. After the first game, he said, we stunk. Our role players are horrible. So what happens? George Hill goes out and gets 29 and sparks them. Duncan goes 1-for-9 and they win. Now, here they're up 3-1. I mean, let's face it, the Mavericks are capable of winning 3 in a row. That's how good and talented they are with Nowitzki. But I'm telling you, this guy is a genuine Hall of Famer.
All right, Dickie V, let's go over to college. We just had the NFL draft. Your thoughts on the new batch of millionaires coming out of college?
Well, you know, I was so excited for Tebow getting drafted in the first round. I really believe he's a first-round player. I don't know football like you guys, but I know a winner's mentality. I know the fact that he's won in every place he's ever been, whether it be junior high, high school, college, and I really believe he's going to bring that winner's mentality. I know he doesn't have the greatest mechanics and all that, but I'm telling you, don't count him out. I thought when you look at the Panthers getting Clawson, I thought getting Jimmy Clawson, what, 46th pick or 48?
48.
I mean, that was a steal. And he's going to a system, according to John Fox, from what I read, very similar to what he was used to at Notre Dame. And I think with the competition with Matt Moore, he got himself an ideal spot to go out and win a lot of playing time and really be a factor. Hey, I want to ask you guys something.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me. Maybe it's because I love enthusiasm. I love energy. What about the college football rule now? Taunting. If you're running into the end zone and the kid wants to demonstrate a little bit of emotion and passion, they're going to penalize them severely? What are we doing now? Taking away passion from the game? I can understand throwing the flag now if a kid is trying to humiliate someone, embarrass someone, and being a real, real idiot. But really, going in and celebrating that you make a great play and you score and you're excited. Because remember this, guys, that's subjective. One referee thinks one way, another thinks another. I think that rule is absurd.
Dickie V every Tuesday with us here. Mike and Mike, we talked about it when they made the new rule.
Yeah.
If you're going into the end zone and you go into some sort of celebration before you get into the end zone, let's say you're 10 yards clear of the pack, you know no one's going to get you, you go into some sort of high-stepping
it or holding the ball up in the air, say at like the 10-yard line.
Instead of like a 15-yard penalty assessed on the kickoff, they're actually going to discount the touchdown. They're going to penalize it there.
Where you started your showboating, say it's a 10-yard line, you get penalized from there. My thought about celebration is if you're taunting, penalize. If you're celebrating, let the kids celebrate. And I mean more in the end zone, you know, after a touchdown. I just can't stand after a big touchdown when a kid starts to celebrate, a ref runs to him and tells him to settle down or cheer with a teammate or something. I think that's an absolute joke. You taunt someone, you get a flag. You want to celebrate, celebrate.
Yeah. My feeling on that has always been consistent, which is I don't mind players celebrating things that are worthy of celebration.
Yeah.
When you score a touchdown, you should be excited. What I can't stand is when a wide receiver catches a 6-yard out and then gets up and acts like he is, you know, like this is his wedding day. I mean, this is your job. Well, whatever, you know, look what I just did. Okay. And your point is, you caught a 6-yard pass.
That
doesn't strike me as worthy of celebration. I would throw a flag on that.
I was in a situation where there was a pass and a linebacker made a big hit after an 8-yard gain after they completed a pass. And people around me going, oh, did you see that hit? Wow, okay, go look. What'd you think of that hit? So you know what I thought of that hit? It's 2nd and 2.
Right.
I said, what do I think of the hit?
Yeah.
I said, and they try to say, well, you know, that guy's going to remember that hit, though. I said, looks to me like the guy's in the huddle ready for the next play on 2nd and 2. I said, I worry more about the coverage than the hit.
I agree with you.
But let's not get up and celebrate. I hate that, too. Celebrate a big hit or something downfield when they're moving the chains?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on.
Like on a 20-yard completion, the guy has one of those knockout blows. Everybody gets up, and the defensive backs are high-fiving and hugging each other. I agree with you. You should celebrate things that are worthy of celebration.
Yeah.
If you have done something worthy of celebration, it should not be flagged. They should throw a penalty for uncelebratory celebrations. Meaning, if you have done something that was just a routine act that in no way is worthy of celebration, and you start jumping up and down, that should be a 15-yard penalty.
Subjective.
And you know what? I will be the arbiter.
You'll be
of that.
It, huh? You'll
I will
to,
have a special
booth,
hotline.
Booth of every game.
There'll be a phone in my house dedicated just to that, and I will call the officials and say that should be back 15 yards.
Beano joins us now via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. And before we get on to anything else, Beano Cook, the Pope of College Football, Beano owes me $100.
$100?
We made a bet $100. I said Tebow was going in the first round. You said second round.
$100 bets.
You said $100 we'll bet on this, Beano.
Oh, we never made a bet on it. You get the tape. Yeah, if it is, I will pay you. But we didn't make a $100 bet. How bad is this? You hold me up every week. Go ahead.
You said to me, let's bet.
I know, we didn't make a $100 bet, but you are.
You actually said $1,000, and I said, you said $1,000, and I said, let's do $100.
I said he would go in the second round, and be picked by New England. Okay, he got picked by Denver, by a coach who learned under Belichick. But you're the champ. You're the champ. You were right. Did you think he would go before Jimmy Clausen?
Oh, I thought, Pino, I was so surprised. I thought Jimmy Clausen wasn't getting out of the top 10 because so many teams there needed a quarterback.
Yeah, I was. I know Mel Kiper was surprised.
Yeah, I was shocked that Mel's guy. I don't know that I can bring up with Mel when I talk to him this week about Jimmy Clausen's slide. I feel so bad for him.
Well, he's you know, I mean, if he were an air controller, he'd be in trouble, but he's just picking who's going to get drafted and when. I don't know if he had a good draft or not. But did the Jets have a good draft?
Oh, of course we had a good draft, Bino. We traded Leon Washington. We got Joe McKnight from USC. We're loading up for a Super Bowl run, Bino. We're just fine.
Well, you know, it's a long ways. I mean, I'm not saying they're not loading up. That's going to be those games between the Jets and New England are going to be great games. But again, I congratulate you. I didn't think Tebow would go in the first round, but these people were saying third and fourth round. I said, I can't believe he won't at least go in the second round. You're a genius.
Well, Bino, let me ask you about Tebow here for a second. Do you think we're going to have to see him early because of the attention surrounding the pick? I don't know that Denver can just sit him down for a year or two and say, we're going to see you in a couple of years.
Well, I don't know how they're going to use him, but I think it's going to be not in a typical quarterback way. It'd be interesting. I'm surprised if he doesn't play some this year. I would be surprised. Yeah. Well, I think he will play this year. Look, a couple of years ago, the Steelers had Maddox at quarterback, and Ben was going to sit the year. And Maddox got hurt. They put in the second game of the year against Baltimore. They put Big Ben in. They still lose to Baltimore, and then they beat. Then they go and play Miami, and I think the next game they lost was to New England for the AFC title. Big Ben doesn't get in unless Maddox gets hurt. They were going to sit him for a year, no matter what they tell you. So you never know. You never know. It's like Montana. Now, I'm not saying Phil Simms was not a good quarterback, but he was drafted before Joe Montana. Now, I was wrong on Jimmy Brown. I said he'd be an average back. But I told people, Joe Montana, I didn't think he'd win four Super Bowls. But I said, he has quick feet, and he's sensational. And I thought he would do real well in the NFL, and I was right.
Wait a minute, Bino. You said Jim Brown was just going to be an average running back in the NFL?
Yeah. I said that.
You're lucky there wasn't sports talk radio back then.
Well, that was good for America. There wasn't talk radio. You got music. You got Sinatra instead of Jason Miller. But you're good, but you're not Sinatra.
Oh, well.
I that's a senior moment. But yeah, you're good, but you're not Sinatra. Do you agree on that?
I will give you that. I am good, but I am not Frank Sinatra.
Okay.
All right. I'll give you that.
In two games against Pitt, he gained 28 yards and 52. And, I thought he was good, but I didn't think he was going to be what he was.
Wow. So you said that he was going to wind up not being a good pro, and then you were right all the way up until. Well, you said
an average
pro.
I didn't think he would be what he was.
Okay.
Honestly, I was wrong.
Yeah, no, that's okay, Bino, because I think it's great that you went that far between being wrong between Jim Brown and Ron Palace. I think you had like 45 years there of being right.
You're the first guy to use Ron Palace in the year 2010. Took you 4 months. I still say, if he doesn't break his collarbone, he lost something on the pass. And Lou Holtz would tell you that. The zing was gone. He broke his collarbone, I think, his freshman year, and he was out for the year. And Lou Holtz told me once, he said, I don't know if he would win two Heisman Trophy, you know, but he might have won one. But the pass wasn't had to sing after he broke his collarbone. That's my only excuse. But that's
we're talking with the Pope of college football. Vino Cook is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. And now, Vino, let's get to Ben Roethlisberger here for a couple of seconds. He accepted a six-game suspension for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy Monday, promised to comply what is asked of me and more. He apologized, sending out a statement. Is this enough for Roethlisberger to put out a statement saying he's sorry, he's going to change, and then he can disappear for a while?
I think the main criticism of the statement was not the statement, but people think he should have appeared, you know, and it should have been on television, not live from the Steeler headquarters, not live television, but read the statement for TV and the evening news. And I don't know whether he should have or not. Obviously, I don't think he wrote the statement, and I think the lawyer looked over the statement before it was released. But I kind of agree. I don't think live, but I think he should have read it. Got out.
Oh, I think we need to see him
in the press room over at the Steeler headquarters and read it. Take no questions, and that's it. But he didn't. But anyway, the statement, I think he will play after four games. But that's the opinion I got from a few people.
He's the one and only Pope of college football, Beano Cook, and a man who, Beano, I'm going to allow you to send me a check for the $100 you owe me, so that's okay.
You play the tape, you get the $100. We can't bet. It's a Disney policy. we can bet a dinner.
I'll play the tape back for you next week, Beano.
You play the tape, I will send you $100.
All right, very good.
Yeah. If I said it, I will pay it. No, you don't. No, I will pay. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'll work on that tape for next week, Beano, and I'll play it for you next week when we talk.
Okay.
Log on to ESPN.com/podcenter or ESPNradio.com for more great podcasts.